Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, as I was saying, I'm joined in studio by HSE Chief Clinical Officer Colm Henry. Good morning to you, Colm. Thank you very much for coming in to us.
Good morning, Philip.
Can we talk, please, about exactly where we are now in terms of the vaccination rollout, please?
Well, we're we can talk numbers, but I can talk impact as well. The numbers are, at this point in time, with 3.2 million vaccines given out. That's 58% of the eligible population have received dose one, and about 28% are fully vaccinated, the eligible population. So that's the numbers. But I think if we look at the impact, though, because what we chose to do in this country, as other countries chose to do, is really tackle and hit the virus where it has its most, where it creates its most havoc among older people, among people with underlying conditions, in hospitals, in nursing homes. And the front end of this program was extremely difficult. People may remember back in January, we had to go into 580 nursing homes in the middle of outbreaks, ferocious outbreaks. We had to vaccinate healthcare workers in hospitals, again in the middle of multiple outbreaks.
And now they see that the list of hospitals that are COVID-free or are not treating any COVID patients is getting longer and longer all the time.
The impact has been, and I say this because we don't often see this in the science-y part of medicine, has been beyond what we expected from the trials. In the middle of January, we were seeing seven outbreaks per day in nursing homes. We were seeing huge numbers of deaths in January, one-third of them in nursing home settings. We were seeing in 1 week, if I remember, 1,000 healthcare workers become infected from COVID in hospitals alone in 1 week. In recent weeks, it's been 2 to 3. So we've seen a collapse in the harm caused by the virus among vaccinated population, way beyond what we could expect.
Which is great if you're a big picture kind of person, but if you're one of those people who has ended up being hospitalised now today, this is going to be very little consolation. So let's just mine down into the figures that relate to those particularly vulnerable sections of the population, if we can, please. How many of the over 60s still remain to be vaccinated?
The uptake, but 90%. So we've substantially completed the dose ones complete of 669s. The dose twos, as people will know from the announcement this week, we brought back the second dose of AstraZeneca, which is the vaccine the 60-69-year-old cohort received. And we were bringing those back beginning this week to complete them by mid-July. Hopefully then we will have completed this cohort, of whom 90% of the age group have registered for the vaccine, by mid-July.
OK, because they are only 33% protected, or 30% protected at the moment, those who have received one jab, which is a point that was raised yesterday and somewhat in the blind, because Dr. Gerald Barry made the point that perhaps we would be better off concentrating our entire resources right now on getting everybody in that age cohort done as quickly as possible and suspending the rollout to the 30 to 39-year-olds. Would that make any difference?
We can do both, Philip. Gerard Barry is absolutely right. We need to finish this cohort as quickly as possible. And you're absolutely correct, that figure you quote, the concern over the Delta variant now spreading quite considerably in the UK. We see now figures gone from the proportion of positive cases that undergo what's called whole genomic sequencing to characterise the virus, gone from 30% of Delta now to 90% in some parts of England this week. But the figure you quoted there, yes, it showed there was early concern that incomplete vaccination of either Pfizer or more particularly AstraZeneca would give you incomplete protection against this.
And you're not tying up your logistical or your administrative or your supply capacity, are you, by continuing to roll out the programme to the younger cohorts instead of concentrating and getting the more vulnerable people done?
We will get to take the more vulnerable cohort, 669s. We are bringing forward that second dose from 12 back to 8 weeks beginning this week, and I will have completed that by the middle of July. And in doing so, there's some additional good news I'd like to give to anybody listening out there. Public Health England just published an appraisal this week of the impact on hospitalisations. And what they found was people who received the full dose of AstraZeneca or Pfizer were in the mid-90s in terms of reduction of hospitalisation from COVID. So there's still compelling evidence that full vaccination from any vaccine gives you considerable protection against serious illness. And I would urge anybody listening, Philip, anybody, complete your course of vaccination. Don't stay halfway up a ladder.
Paul Reid on Morning Ireland this morning encouraged anybody who hasn't received the second jab to come forward. What does he mean by that? I mean, surely they should be being called forward by the HSE.
I would phrase it that way. They're called for, absolutely. We, as people will know, we text them, we communicate with them for that second dose.
So they don't need to do anything. They can just sit and wait and receive the text message.
For anyone worrying is about that second dose, we will be factoring this in now. We will be bringing back that incrementally from 12 back to 8 weeks, and we'll be calling you sooner than you would have been expected. And that means, and I would emphasise again and again, Philip, mm-hmm. the evidence shows, especially the strong evidence coming through from Public Health England, is it gives you full vaccination, AstraZeneca, gives you substantial protection against serious illness. Okay.
And when the system works well, it works really well for those who have been identified for vaccination. But we're hearing quite a lot of stories of people who have fallen between the cracks for whatever reason, and they find the system almost impenetrable to try and engage with to get onto a list. How do those people approach this?
Yes, we have had some stories of people not being called for the second vaccine or delayed call, and we're addressing those as a particular standalone project because we want to make sure everybody's picked up. We're acutely aware of our responsibility to everybody to make sure they get fully vaccinated.
And how do people identify that group that are doing that job?
Anybody concerned, HSE, ring up the HSE line. We are making that available to people. We're receiving calls all the time. We're resolving problems that people have in terms of delayed vaccination at HSE Live calls. I urge anybody to call that number if they have any concerns about delayed call for that second mm-hmm. dose. We want to make sure everybody gets that second dose. We all get protected that way.
Another thing that Paul Reid said this morning on Morning Ireland, if you don't mind helping with a bit of clarification, he suggested that by the 5th of July, we were going to be into the 30% in terms of the proportions of the population that would be fully vaccinated. Now, is that 31% or 39%? Which would it be closer to?
We've learned to our cost, Philip, to be very careful about making predictions because of the multiple supply disruptions we've experienced in the beginning of this programme. But at this point in time, as I speak to you this morning, 28% of the eligible population are fully covered. So I think there's a reasonable hope that we'd be well into the 30s, but it's supply dependent. And of course, bringing forward that AstraZeneca second dose for that 60-69 cohort amounting to about 240,000 people will considerably bump up that figure. And that means we're moving closer towards this concept that we all have heard about from the beginning of herd immunity. If we hit enough of the population, really get into the mm-hmm. high 80s of the population fully vaccinated, we will have hopefully dealt a mortal blow to the virus.
We know at the moment that the National Immunisation Advisory Committee is still holding its opinion on mixing and matching vaccines. What's your own opinion on that? Are you going to sit and wait for them, or are you going to follow the example of Canada and Spain and other countries and give one AstraZeneca and one Pfizer if it gets people done quicker?
Well, just to clarify, Phil, first of all, the National Immunisation Advisory Council, that's our independent body that appraises the evidence for us in real time, 7 days a week. I spoke to Karina Butler last night. I know and I'm confident that they'll look at the vaccine at the evidence as it comes in, but they have to come up with a judgment at a point in time, and there's been multiple iterations of their advice, as all of us know, over the past few months, most recently, as I just said, of bringing forward that dose 2 vaccine. With relation to the mixed vaccines, yes, there's a number of studies, many of them small, that look at it, that show us that mixing the vaccines is safe, first of all, in terms of the side effect profile. It doesn't appear to boost up or make more dangerous the mix of vaccines than you would if you'd stuck to one vaccine. And there's certainly some evidence that it produces a better immune response, which kind of stands to reason, because they're both one type of vaccine tends to provoke what we call a T-cell response and another tends to provoke an antibody response. Both do the same, but they have different emphasis. So there's a logical mm-hmm. argument to mixing the vaccines. But at this point in time, NIAC felt at their last iteration, which was only a number of weeks ago, that the evidence isn't compelling enough yet for us to mix vaccines.
Would it necessarily speed things up if you were to do that? Is supply still an issue?
No, not necessarily at all. But I would say my only fear personally, and you asked me, is that people will then pause and think, well, maybe I won't take my second dose because there may be a change in policy. And there may well be, because we've seen so many changes as the evidence changes, NIAC's advice will change. But the big danger, as I would see, speaking on behalf of the HSE and certainly the medical community, is if we see a lot of people not take up their second dose, then we'll see a lot of people who are not protected.
Okay. Now, I know you have set out the HSE's thinking and NPHET's thinking as well on antigen testing quite a few times already, but if you don't mind going over it with me once again, particularly in the light of Professor Ferguson's report recommending its adoption and the Transport Committee suggesting that we should be moving quickly to piloting it. Does the HSE's position still remain the same?
I think some of this debate has become quite polarising and somewhat binary, as either they're for or against them. Of course, there's a role for antigen testing as part of a comprehensive public health response. But as a standalone test, our own expert group, and I was listening to your previous discussion here, our own expert group have been meeting in this October, and they haven't been sitting on the report. It was only signed off last week, I know, because it came to my desk. And their opinion was that based on the evidence, and the ECDC has asked every member state to test antigen tests in their own settings, in their own field settings, to see if they're valid. And they tested, looked at a number of tests in symptomatic patients, as was the kind of recommendation coming from the company that produced it, but also in asymptomatic settings. And what they found was exactly what you discovered, that as was said in the last discussion, in people who are symptomatic, who have high viral loads, they're quite good. They pick up lots of cases. So in outbreak settings, we could use antigen testing based on the advice of public health authorities. We also found through this study that was released by the HSE that in meat plant factories, the repeated asymptomatic workers got over the lower sensitivity in asymptomatic workers. We know, as was said before, that it picks up about 1 in 2 of positive cases that PCR picks up in asymptomatic meat plant workers. So in that context, repeated testing gets over that lowered sensitivity. But just to be clear, Philip, because I think it's in all this discussion, it's important to be clear, a positive antigen test is a good red light. It means if you've got a positive antigen test, it tells you that you're probably actively infectious with the virus, very highly probable, and as such, it's a good red light not to do something. But a negative antigen test, particularly in somebody who has those symptoms, is not a green light to dispose of all, or to dispense with all the other public health measures that you would need mm-hmm. to do so, because it doesn't give that kind of assurance.
I accept all of that, but it is still another layer, another net with which to catch people that we're turning our backs on.
Well, we're not. We're this yesterday, as you've heard, the announcement from Minister Harris on a pilot study that's been supported and sponsored by the HSE in higher level institutions. We're also planning a similar type exercise in schools and in childcare facilities. And as I said already, we're already deploying this in meat plant factories, asymptomatic workers. And we're also using it in our public health departments based on the public health risk assessment in outbreak settings. It's particularly valuable, I would say, this test in outbreak settings or in areas of high prevalence.
Is your worry, though, that it would end up being used irresponsibly? Is that why there is so much hesitancy?
I would never want to accuse anybody of being irresponsible, but my worry is how people might interpret the result if it's negative. And as I said, if it's positive, it's a very good test. So if it's a positive test, it does mean that it's highly likely that you are infectious with the virus.
Okay, so is that another way then of saying antigen tests in the hands of medical professionals is a useful tool, but not in the public's hands?
What we have found in this study is the quality of the result has a direct correlation with the quality of the setting where it was taken, how the test was taken, how the swab was taken. In other words, if the swab is taken either supervised by a healthcare professional or taken directly by a healthcare professional, then the result is much more reliable than if it's taken by the person themselves.
Because sticking a swab up your nose is a painful and unpleasant experience, and it needs to be done very, very thoroughly to be accurate.
Not something I would like to do, but you're correct. It's not a pleasant experience, no.
Yeah. Text on 51551, just wondering when the 20 to 30-year-olds will be called for vaccination. I have someone who's very keen to be vaccinated so that they can get on with living. Many thanks, Sarah.
Yes, we'll get there. We're hoping we'll announce later this week when we open the portal to 30 to 39 year olds. We're well into the 40 to 49 year olds now. We see again very high levels of uptake and registration. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get through this next cohort of 30 to 39 year olds going into the summer, and then of course the 20 to 29 year olds. And it won't have finished then, Philip, because we're looking
just before you go on from that, when will the portal open for 30 to 39?
That will be announced later this week.
announced?
It will be announced later this week, but we haven't had a definitive date yet, so I can't announce the date today.
All right. And how much longer after that then do you expect for the 20 to 30 year olds? Is it a fortnight, 3 weeks?
I expect it to be a number of weeks. Certainly, it'll be supply dependent. As I said earlier in the programme, so much of this story today has been about the broken supply lines or the supplies that haven't come. But we'll be moving in July largely to mRNA vaccines alone. That's Pfizer, Moderna, and they're the two vaccines that have proved quite reliable in terms of supplies. So that will give us great cause for hope that we'll be able to proceed to 3039s and 2029s fairly quickly.
Is the cyber attack still impacting on logistics?
A huge impact on the whole healthcare service, Philip, way beyond what people might appreciate. It's hard. I've visited many sites myself over the past few weeks, and the manual workarounds that doctors and nurses have had to do in hospitals and out in community care and GPs have been would frighten anybody, because in the absence of those usual IT supports at the beginning, doctors didn't have access to previous tests, previous results, previous X-rays. GPs were unable to refer patients to hospital. They were unable to access old results. We saw our IT teams work up and down the country right across 24/7 trying to fix this. But it's not a simple case of switching a light on again. It's more akin, when you think of the complexity of the multiple IT systems supporting clinical pathways, of smashing a glass vase and putting it together again. And that's what we're doing. And there will be a long tail to this yet.
Can I pick up on a point that came up in our conversation about travel and aviation in particular? Is there medical justification or necessity for fully vaccinated people having to undergo quarantine?
Yes, I've seen the discussion of that over the past few days. It doesn't appear to make sense. Of course, we have concern over the Delta variant.
It doesn't appear to make sense.
On the face of it, it doesn't. But when you look at when you look at the emerging threat from the Delta variant, there's some evidence of vaccine escape. But as I said, predominantly after the first dose for incompletely vaccinated people, yes, it's a lower level of effectiveness. But for fully vaccinated people, the evidence from the Delta vaccine is the vaccine. Okay. Seem to be effective in reducing serious illness.
Well, so then presumably it makes even less sense to get to the situation which we're going to be in a couple of weeks' time, where people arriving from the UK would have to isolate, quarantine for up to 10 days. People arriving from the EU won't.
Well, the question for government, of course, is making such a decision is, does the vaccine reduce transmission of the virus? In other words, it's not just a question of you not becoming ill from the virus having been vaccinated, is whether you stop transmitting the virus. And the evidence is getting more powerful to date that it does indeed reduce transmission. That not only does it protect you from getting hospitalised, from getting into ITU, from dying, or not only does it reduce outbreaks, but it may indeed reduce the chances of you as an individual carrying this asymptomatically and passing on the virus. And if that's so, it will give us greater confidence in releasing any quarantine restrictions.
Maternity services and partners accompanying pregnant women into hospital for the birth. Has there been backtracking on this when it comes to promises made here in this area?
I don't think backtracking has been a very volatile environment in hospitals in the past few. Again, to remind you, back in January, we had at least three, maybe four hospitals that were on the verge of closing because of the impact of outbreaks. That caused significant damage, not only in terms of the surgery giving, but more importantly, it caused significant harm in terms of health of COVID-acquired infection within hospitals. And of course, we've seen as well the potential harm that the virus has caused among pregnant women in terms of admission to ITU for small numbers of cases, but also in terms of this reported placentitis associated with stillbirth. So,
Is there a single comprehensive policy, though, on partners coming in, or are hospitals making up their own minds?
We have a single policy as we came out of this surge in January and February, and as the vaccine began to take hold, and as we developed greater confidence in returning to some kind of normality in hospitals, we've successfully eased that policy. And the policy we've released as recently as last week calls for and allows for partners to be present in the labour ward during labour to visit the neonatal intensive unit.
Well, can you explain to me then why it is that we're still hearing about partners not being allowed?
We have done a survey after the last policy, and we found that of the 19 maternity units, 15 were fully compliant and 4 were not. And obviously we're engaging with those, and a cyber attack came along.
So hospitals are making up their own minds.
they were interpreting it in a way that was, in our opinion, was too rigid in some cases. I have to say that I understand what happened, given the experience they've had over the past few months and the harm that the COVID-19 posed to women and indeed to babies. I can understand their reaction. But that said, I think we have greater confidence now with the falling levels and more pointedly, the reduced harm the virus is causing because of the vaccination programme.
Okay. Final question, taking a step back, do you think that we're moving in the right direction to keep on reopening as has been planned and set out by the government?
Yes, I don't think I've ever been as hopeful as I have at this point in time. It has been a really dreadful 14 months, 15 months for everybody. Everybody has their own story. Every age group has suffered in different ways. The older people from fear, from the virus itself, and from being isolated. Younger people from lost opportunities in life. What the vaccine programme promises to do is release us from the vice of this virus. And that should only be a cause of hope for all of us.
And the UK pausing its gradual loosening of regulations doesn't give you any pause?
We have seen this happen in other countries, Philip. In Chile and Israel, we saw this calibration of reopening society versus the critical mass of people to be vaccinated. In Israel, they seem to have got it right in that there wasn't a resurgence of cases when they reopened society. In Chile, it maybe was timed too early and they saw a resurgence.
So you're saying that the UK's vaccination programme means that they've reached a tipping point where they can be a bit more generous?
There's a calibration point, and this is something we're doing this in real time. We have no model against which to measure ourselves. So time will tell who gets it right and who gets it wrong. But as with any medical decisions, be it on a ward or a GP surgery, you make the decision today based on the evidence in front of you.
Okay. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Coming up after the break, everything that you ever wanted to know about puberty in boys but might have been afraid to ask.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.